And now a journey. Let's take one into a place few journalists can enter. Correspondent Laura Lynch has recently returned from 7 days essentially undercover in Syria, tracking United Nations monitors there, watching their seemingly hopeless mission to maintain a ceasefire arranged by UN envoy Kofi Annan. Laura reported on what she saw in Syria for PRI's The World, produced by our partner WGBH. Welcome to the program, Laura.
Thanks, John.
So, first of all, you were tracking the UN monitors, and so in a sense you have a kind of unique view of what it was they were seeing as they try to implement or monitor this shaky, if at all, ceasefire in Syria. What are the UN monitors seeing as you tracked their steps?
I wish I could tell you every day what they were seeing in different places, but it's impossible to keep track of all of them. On the 2 days that I did go out with them, one day we went to Homs, which before now had been pretty much impossible for journalists to get into, at least journalists like me who went in there with a visa. And they went right up into the area where there is still a lot of clashes going on. And we could hear the gunfire, and we could sometimes hear the thudding of a shell now and then. We were stopped at the edge of that and told that it was too risky for us to go any further, but they went right in. They talked to members of the Free Syrian Army and came back out again. They will not talk to the media, so there's no point in trying to interview them about what they see and what they've heard. The next time I went out with them was to a small village called Demir. And again, this was a risky trip, and the government forces who were supposed to protect them said, "We're not going in there. It's too dangerous. The rebels, as they call them, are holding the town." So the monitors went in, two cars. And remember, these cars aren't armored, and these men are not armed, and they're not wearing helmets, and they were not wearing heavy protective body armor. We went in about maybe half a mile in, and what had been an absolutely empty town, you couldn't see a soul, people started spilling out of their homes and surrounding our cars. They saw the UN vehicles, and they wanted to start telling them their stories. At that point, things started to get a little bit rough. People were holding up shells and bullets and saying that the government forces had tried to shell the town the night before. We turned around and headed out at that point. The UN monitors kept going in. We stayed on the edge at the army checkpoint, waiting for them to come out. It took about 45 minutes to an hour. When they came out, the rear window of one of the vehicles was smashed, and the mirror of another one had also been broken. Now, we don't know exactly what went on in there, but there have been other incidents that I have read about where monitors have had rocks thrown at them. Some of those in the opposition are frustrated with the UN, either because they think they're not doing enough to reduce the violence, or because some of them consider them to be almost spies for the regime. After they go and talk to them, then the UN leaves, the government forces, they say, come in and start going after them for talking to the UN.
Well, it's a complicated story, but also a story of bravery that you're describing there of what the monitors are doing. You know, we're going to hear a couple of voices who have very different views, as you suggest, about the international role here. But when the general who is running the UN mission in Syria and the spokespeople for the UN talk, they say that when monitors go into conflict areas in Syria, that it has the impact of sort of settling things down. Is that your experience? Is that what you're seeing?
Not exactly. I think that may well have been true initially when they were first setting things up, and there seemed to be some effort on both sides to pull back. But now I think increasingly they're starting to see that the conflict appears to be ramping up again. And I think it's getting more and more challenging for them to be able to do their jobs. They were in Aleppo yesterday, and again, a crowd of thousands came out at the university to surround their cars when they were in there. It resulted at the end of the day in another clash with the forces, and the UN had to leave. Now, I'll just tell you, what I noticed, I wasn't there, but what I noticed on the video that I saw, which of course we cannot verify, was a UN monitor wearing a helmet and very heavy body armor, which may signal a change in their approach to things and an implicit acknowledgement that this mission is becoming more difficult and dangerous.
Well, and as you suggest, and this is really what was so extraordinary about your reporting while you were in Syria, is there is a sense of division. There's not a clear consensus about what the UN role is here. Is it a positive role or is it a negative role? Let's listen to two voices here on very different sides of whether the United Nations mission is helping or hurting.
Yesterday, we were under fire from shelling and guns, this man says, pointing to the shops. Look at the damage. They shot at civilians. We want help from the UN. This is their gift to us, he says. Is this democracy? Is this freedom? I don't think this is freedom. I think this is a conspiracy against my country.
Two snapshots from the reporting of Laura Lynch, a correspondent for PRI's The World, produced by our partner WGBH. Laura, describe what was going on in both of those scenes.
Well, in the first one, that was, again, in this village of Damir that was rebel-held, and it was one of the people who came up to the car and was saying that the army had mounted an operation overnight, and he was essentially beseeching the UN to come in and stop the violence. The second one that you heard was actually the day of the double car bombing in the center of Damascus. Mm-hmm. And that man was living in an apartment across the street from where the bombs went off, and his apartment was utterly destroyed. I am still amazed when I think about the fact he and his wife and his three daughters actually survived that explosion, because their bedrooms, which faced the street, were an utter wreck. He is a regime supporter, and he believes that there are foreign, as he puts them, foreign terrorists coming into the country and perpetrating these kinds of acts. For him, perhaps the UN isn't able to do enough to protect him either. So my impression is that the UN is getting it from all sides, and I'm sure that it expected that to happen.
An impression now of your being on the ground in Syria, what's it like to go from neighborhood to neighborhood, city to city, where so much of the territory is either rebel-held or pro-regime? What is that like for the residents of Syria?
Well, John, you've got to understand that I had what I consider to be a fairly limited view of this. I had a visa given to me by the government that lasted for 7 days. My ability to get around was limited to where the UN was going to go, because when I did go out with the UN, I didn't have any government minders with me. We were free to go with them without having anyone watch our work. Beyond that, my ability to get around in Damascus was just to get around on my own and have casual chats with people. And, you know, the feelings about the conflict and who is responsible, you're right, they do change from neighborhood to neighborhood. There are pockets in Damascus which are very pro-regime. And then you can walk into other neighborhoods and have chats with people who are very strong opposition supporters and at the very least want to see some kind of reform. What I think gets lost, though, in this vivid, vivid division between these two groups is a middle ground of people, very, very anxious to see peaceful demonstration return to the country, but their voices seem to be getting drowned out in all the violence.
And one opposition figure you spoke with described Syria as a fragile society which is not united. Will it ever be united, do you think?
Well, it's always been, as you well know, a country that managed to bridge its differences between different groups, you know, Alawites, Muslims, Sunnis, the Christians, all living together. But they had to live together in a dictatorship, essentially. Whether they can actually make it to another kind of a society, a democratic society that is not sectarian, looks like a huge challenge to me, John.
Laura Lynch, correspondent for PRI's The World, spent 7 days in Syria. Thanks so much, Laura.
You're welcome.